When a statistician speaks of sampling population, most people naturally understand by population means maybe citizens of Toronto and a sampling of some people to compute some average height, or maybe sampling of families of Toronto to estimate some average income per family. And statisticians also had this population in mind. But statistical theory was not developed by statisticians handling these kinds of populations. That was developed by astronomers, biologists, geneticists, and so on. Though they also had this kind of population back of their mind, but their primary population in their work were different, and their theory was directed towards that. And later on, when they thought to apply that theory to the population I mentioned in the beginning, population of Toronto or families, then they started creating trouble. And later on it was found that there seems to be a basic paradox. That's what I'm going to speak today. We will look at first some background history. Now, there are, as you know, most people know, and everywhere there are controversies, different views. That is true also in statistics, so there's nothing new. There are three kinds of, broadly speaking, frequency, logical, and subjective. But that is not, whatever your inclination may be, the subject of study of most probabilists and statisticians was the set of results obtained by independent repetitions over and over again of some chance mechanism. And now here, by chance mechanism, we mean spinning of a roulette wheel or throwing a die, and so on. Now, there are two words which I have not defined here, chance here, and independence. And they may have different connotations for these different kinds of people. I'm not going into that. And this, the distribution of these results, say just mentioned, was assumed to be known. That's a repetition. You repeat the experiment over and over again, and the distribution would be known except for some constant. And that constant came to be regarded as a parameter. This is something similar to all sciences, that all the other sciences were deterministic. Statistics, of course, was not. They wanted to know the result of something. Here, there was a distribution, which was, because there was a process, and that process created a distribution. Distribution was assumed to be known to a large extent, but some part was not known, and that was to be assessed through sample. Assessed, estimated through. For instance, an astronomical experiment, you would be observing some planet, there will be this, if you observe over and over again, there would be some distribution. Unknown might be the mean position, and that could be called parameter, and that is to be estimated from the repeated observations. So two things now here happened. One was the population was of the repeated observation, repeated hypothetically infinitely. This was the population. In a way, abstract population. This population, in form, was supposed to be known, excepting, say, some parameter like mean or variance or something that was not known, and that was to be estimated from some sample repetition, that was called a random sample, roughly speaking. So there are two things here, hypothetical population which was generated by repetition, and some repetitions they were available to you were called a random sample. If anything is not clear, please do ask questions also ask, but I may or may not be able to answer now or any time, but if some clarification is required, perhaps that will help me.
If you could move those overheads higher up,
I should this way?
No, here? Even higher up, yeah.
Oh, I see. Thank you very much. Thank you. I should have looked there. Thus here, this I just now said, the problem was to estimate parameter of hypothetical population. Now this idea grew very gradually, right from the inception of probability itself. However, it was not stated, it was not formalized. If I say not formalized, that is saying too much. It was not even stated clearly until 1956 in Fisher. Now what happens in hypothetical population, I say we get results one after another, and those could be in a n times. If you do it, then they would be, suppose they are real for convenience, x1, xi and xn. Now here the important thing to be remembered, particularly with subsequent discussion in view, that these two observations, apart from magnitude, could be distinguished from order, and this would play an important role subsequently. And we assume now here independent identical distributed. You don't have to say identically, independently distributed. Identically would be required because if you want to know that the form of distribution is known, but actually what I would be saying throughout will be would not need that identity, but independence, that too with various interpretations, and the mean value of this is theta. Now what I will do, you are not supposed to look at it unless I say it. Those are just equations which I would now and then refer to. So the scientist wants to estimate theta on the basis of a random sample of observations x1, x2, x5, xn. That is the situation, and I told you the background. How to estimate theta? The famous theorem of Gauss, 1821 or 23, I don't exactly know, around that time. It's a very other theorem, and that is for generalized linear models came this century, linear models. And it was this, that if you combine all those linearly, these observations, like this, AI, XI, where AI depends on the order. As I said, the observations x1, x2, xn there, here, they could be distinguished only by order apart from the magnitude. Magnitudes are not known unless the observation becomes available. AI, XI, if you take such combination, then a very simple conclusion of all, if you want to make them unbiased, what is a good combination? And a very special, very, very special case of famous theorem of Gauss says that this should be the case. AI should be all equal to 1 upon n. Now, let me correct it here. I said I would not need identity, that is true, but here you need some assumption of variance, the variance is right. But I don't want to go to detail, I want to go to the paradox that I would be have to mention soon. So this is the theorem. Of all the linear observation combinations you can make, the best combination in the sense of minimizing the variance is given by arithmetic mean. And this principle of arithmetic mean was ruling statistics for long, long time. Most of the situations in sample surveys also people thought that arithmetic mean would be optimum, and then that created some kind of troubles, as you will see. Now, this hypothetical population I mentioned just now, and that started with Fermat and Pascal. Along the same time, about the same time, that is 1662 or something, in England is Grant. The mortality data was being collected in connection with that plague that was going on and so on, and there was some kind of actual population in mind. So there was an actual finite or enumerative population model in view, and that was not systematically developed, but it was there. And first person is Grant, and there is Grant, and there are so many others afterwards. But still we will see that this kind of populations were ignored by those who developed statistical theory, and those were astronomers, biologists, geneticists, and so on. Actual populations, just for simple illustrations, if you want, these are residents of a town or households of a county, farms, balls in a bag, and so on. Now, this is the important thing. The distinction between actual and hypothetical population rests in the fact that the former, unlike the latter, consists of individuals. In this here, for instance, individuals would be residents, here households, here agricultural farms, and so on. And in hypothetical population, of course, you do not have individuals. This is the distinction, and that distinction was lost sight of for a long, long time and led to confusion. Now, suppose a survey is conducted to determine the average income per household of this population P2. P2 was what? No, it's not given here. P2 was households in a county. All right. Now, suppose there are 10,000 in number and you want to draw a random sample. How would you draw? Previously, we have seen this in a hypothetical population, whatever observation, skulls, for instance. The biologist finds a skull. Those skulls come to your hand, assume to be a random sample, from the process. Process has a population, has a distribution. Here, the population is actually in front of you, 10,000 households. And you draw a random sample. How would you draw a random sample? You first find out some tested random device, properly tested, and then you draw a random sample. To draw a random sample, households, you have to identify all individuals in a population. That identification means you have to attach some label to that population. Now, for county, for instance, households, you might have the postal number, call that I. So the population would consist of these 1,000 numbers, 10,000 numbers, going from 1 to 10,000. Hence, to a survey, etc., etc., you draw from this a sample of households means subset of this P2. So the data becomes like this. I, first you draw I, that is an individual, household, then observe X, that is the income. So the data is IXI, I in the, this should be belongs to, I would have like one line here, I in S, okay. And we will assume this sample size, have I said, oh yeah, I said it here, 100, so S is 100. Okay. Now this sample is to be distinguished from this sample. In case of hypothetical population, that was, this S was not there. Now conventionally in survey sampling, this S is called a sample. Now in a hypothetical population, this S was not existent, and therefore excess in 1 was called a sample then, x1, x2, xi. Now, it's important to compare further the data 1, that is this, from the data 7 I just now mentioned. From 2, in hypothetical population, from 2 here, for each xi we have a value theta, expected value of xi is theta. From the same process it is drawn, I equal to 1 to n, the hypothetical population mean. Unlike in the hypothetical population, in actual population you don't have to refer to the random mechanism to define the population mean. That is simply given by arithmetic. This is the mean of the population. Population P2 in 6 means households and 10,000 households, so you compute the mean. Now the important question is, very important question, how to estimate the population mean in 8? This, that is the income of the 10,000 families or households there. And then we ask the question, is Gauss's theorem on arithmetic mean, Gauss proved that arithmetic mean was optimum, minimum variance, etc., of any relevance here? Note the x values with data 7, unlike 1, have no natural order which is required to define the linear estimate in 3. Here there is no order in 7, there is no order except, okay, have no order in which to require to define linear estimate. It should be emphasized here that I, small I, represents the order, that denotes the order of the observation, while I in 7 denotes the identity label of the corresponding individual. One may impose an order artificially, I should say, by imposing some kind of sampling with or without replacement. And this is what survey statistician did for a long time, because that is hangover of Gauss's theorem and framework. So this was done. But all this led to nothing. It was all fruitless. As usual, one can compute the arithmetic mean of excess in 7 here, and that is indeed unbiased for the population mean theta. But unlike the arithmetic mean in 9, unlike in 5, this arithmetic mean, this was, we said, was unbiased, and along with it, it has also a minimum variance. But here, this mean hasn't got that property. And let us illustrate this point further. Consider the situation, so from population P2, where is P2? A random sample S is drawn with replacement. Let Xi denote the X value associated with I draw, I equal to 1 to N. Now as before, the class of linear estimate L in 3, so we can form it. Now this has an order, so you can construct those kind of estimates. And Gauss's theorem applies here straight away, where you are doing sampling with replacement, independence is there, everything is there. You can compute this L star the same as before, and now this L star in this class has minimum variance, that goes without saying. But is this of any use? More accurately, now here we can say L star has unbiased, no doubt, but minimum variance. More accurately, what we say, it, what does it estimate actually? More accurately, the optimality of L star in 10 is as follows. For the mean theta prime, so separated from theta, that theta here, mean of the population, theta prime of the hypothetical population observations generated by repeated infinite number of draws, that is the hypothetical population, made with replacement from population P2 in 6, that there, 6, L star draws, number of draws made with replacement in P2, L star has, L star is unbiased and minimum variance. And it so happens that that theta prime of this mean, that is mean of the hypothetical population, happens to be identical with the mean of this. It's just arithmetic here. But is this anything, is this of any avail? The answer is not of much avail. Let us see how. Now the above stated property of L star of being in etc. of little value in view of the existence of underlying population, actual population P2. All these households, labeled households. How? I have said it, that there is a label already. For each draw I, the surveyor, in addition to observing X value, namely Xi, as said before, observes the label I, Xi for that individual, associated with individual drawn at draw I. Thus in n repeated draws made with replacement, the surveyor knows which individuals I of the population P2 have appeared more than once. Okay. Now let SD be the subset of distinct units drawn. And suppose you take the mean on those distinct individuals. SD is the size again. That is the size of the distinct, size of the set of distinct, the subset, size of the subset of this, etc. Then variance of this is smaller than variance of L star here. And this was not quite, now it is clear to those who have handled this often, but long time there was a discussion about 60s. There was heated debate as to which one is appropriate, this or that, until mathematics was available to show this. And also statistics, for instance, theory of sufficiency, etc., was used to show. But of course, this L star, L2, L double 2 star here, is not an estimate of this kind. From this discussion, it should be clear that Gauss's in sampling finite population, in sampling actual population, labeled population, labeled with populations in labeled individuals, you have estimation procedures which fall outside the framework of Gauss's theorem. And the result is much more general, that when you have actual populations, you're sampling actual populations, there is no such thing as unbiased minimum variance estimate. This awareness, understanding came very gradually, and only about half a century ago, it was proved rigorously here. And what happened at that time earlier, several authors tried to, because Gauss's framework was there and some all the statistical problems must be fitted there somehow, when the survey samplers were doing their sampling and they were saying labels and everything, and a minimum variance theorem was there, they tried to fit it somehow, the framework, and the result was confusion. And this is very vividly reflected in survey sampling literature of the time. Any questions up to now? Okay. Now I'm going to talk about my problem. That this distinction was ignored, and this was ignored in not only estimation, ignored in developing general statistical theory. Because this statistical theory, as I said in the beginning of the talk, was developed by astronomers, biologists, genetists, and so on. Their population, as I told you, are hypothetical. So all the theory was developed to suit their needs naturally. And they developed the statistical theory is not full formalization, partial formalization of intuitive concepts like likelihood, sufficiency, power, etc. This formal led to principles of inference, and that to different schools of thought like Bayesian sequences. I need not go into details about that. I am going to emphasize one principle here, this principle of inference is so, because it is so obvious, so intuitive for all philosophical persuasions, remained not only not formalized but even not stated. And that principle I am going to call ancillarity principle. What does it say? Informally stated. Suppose x is a random variable. Now this x and xi don't mix up, please. This is a general random variable. Is a random variable taking values in a finite set x on which is defined the probability distribution p. P, suppose this p is mathematically completely specified known, then observation on x is irrelevant for any inference. And that's true. This formal statement will be given there. Here it just says that watching outcome of a toss of an unbiased coin would be useless to predict whether it would rain on a certain day. I mean, most people would agree here, right? But when you apply it to finite population, actual individual population, it does not hold. That's what I'm going to show. Okay. Or the same outcome could not have helped Gauss to locate the position of a missing planet. Gauss, that was a very remarkable achievement of Gauss, to locate some planet which was missing using the least square theory of estimation. So this here, that would not have helped Gauss. But he did analyze the least square proper data and could do the job. Now this was, again I have stated, this 13 principle, 13 means what I just said, is not there. I am going to refer to this principle again. That is, there is a class of distributions, everything is known, and observing the random variable would not tell you anything about any unknown constant of the universe. This actual population, this principle, though very appealing for hypothetical, but is not so for actual population with individual labels. That's what we're going to. First, very informally, paradox. What is the paradox? We have, say, 2n exactly identical slips and spread them on spread them on a right side, write some plus 1 or minus 1 number on this, okay, and spread them on the hidden side is written the number plus 1 or minus 1, okay, and of these 2n slips you will draw a random sample of n slips, okay. Now what is the unknown thing? Unknown parameter here is precisely obtained by naming the slips that bear plus 1 and minus 1. So there are how many parametric values are there? So many. And we denote all of them by omega. We have drawn out of 2n slips a random sample of a, we have not observed the hidden side at all. We only have these n slips in front of you, say a random sample in front of you. And you know it is drawn from 2n slips. Hidden side is a number, plus 1 or minus. And with this, just which n slips you have drawn, you make inference about omega. The distribution of this S, that is n slips, which n you draw, which is called a sample here. The actual, the n slips you have drawn is a sample from the population of 2n slips. And on the basis of that, without looking at the other side at all, we make inference about omega. And that is so intuitive. Here it is written. We will make this formula later. The values of theta, that is vectors, plus 1, minus 1, in omega, which assign the n slips that constitute S, for example, random proportion plus 1 greater than 1 half plus epsilon, or smaller than 1 half minus epsilon, for suitably chosen epsilon, if n is this large, epsilon can be this small, are impossible, implausible rather. Yet the distribution of S is independent of theta. P theta S is equal to 1 upon 2n C small n for all theta in omega. Let us see alternative version, and finally we will give the formal version of this. Alternatively, suppose there is a bag containing 2n black or white balls labeled 1 to I up to n, and you know in that bag one half are black and one half proportion is white. And now suppose again you draw n from them. Without looking at the balls at all, you can say that this will have nearly half white, half black. Little reflection shows that you are making an inference. That people did not understand. This part, up to this, they would say, yes, that is intuitive. But what is not so intuitive is that, you see, this implies an inference about the balls in the bag. That is, what arrangements are there, plus 1, minus 1, the vectors. I have written the statement, a little reflection would show, is equivalent to saying on the basis of the drawn observed S in the bag, some arrangement, that is whether ball label I is black or white, I equal to 1, is implausible, are implausible. Yet the probability of S is independent of such arrangement. And now we go, there are two words here. Here I said nearly certain, we feel nearly certain that nearly half the proportion, etc. To make them more clear, we will introduce some formalism. Very little formalism. In general, we say statistical experiment consists of sample space, abstract x here. This is fine. We're all finite. Don't know my mathematical problem. Omega parameters, theta, abstract, and p class of distributions on omega. Now, we say that the assumption, basic assumption, that there is on the basis of x. Given an experiment on the basis of x, you can make some inference about theta. And that is indicated by inference. Without characterizing what it is, we just say inference. And this formalism was used by Birnbaum in 62. Okay, with this formalism, we will now state the principle of ancillarity, which I just previously stated informally. If p theta is the same, p theta means p theta bracket abstract x. If that is for each x, if this is p theta is the same for all theta, for convenience you can say p theta x is equal to fx where f is known, function of x, completely specified function of function f into bracket x. So if p theta is the same for all theta and omega, then this inference is same for all x. That is, no inference is possible about theta. In the experiment M, and we can make more specifically, which necessarily depends on it, that we don't have to say, because in this formalism everything is stated already, that the formalism is you have M, experiment, sample space, parameter space, and class of distribution. You have observed a random variable x, and then you want to infer about theta. And then, if the distribution is the same for all theta, no inference is possible. And this is contradicted. Now, all that I said informally, I will very quickly say through paradox. Late in 14, now that is there 14 there now? I think that could be now removed. Let in 14 there, that is this theta, this abstract theta be a vector with components plus or minus 1. Theta 1, theta I, theta n, and we say omega is a parameter space, all theta, theta I is equal to plus 1 or minus 1, and sum of the thetas is equal to 0. That is, half are plus 1 and half are minus 1. We have changed now from 2n, we take n now because for notational convenience. Okay. Now, what is this x, abstract x here? This is totality of subsets from this population, from this 1 to n integers. And this is the same. All right. And what is p, the class of probability distribution functions that are mentioned here? P theta S for each S here. Now S is the X previously. 1 upon NCN, we are going to draw a random sample. That is, S is drawn from S, random sample. For all theta. Hence from 16, according to the ancillarity principle, this, or actually here, all right. This is formal O. This is formal and this is informal. Hence, according to the principle, no inference about theta based on S prime, or we will say any two points, S prime and S2 prime, the inference should be the same, and this is contradicted by the mode of inference. I told you previously informally, now I will tell you formally. Compute this function, which is function of with arguments S and theta. It is the mean of observed all thetas in S. Take the mean. Now it is easy to see that this under the random sampling has fixed distribution for all thetas. And its mean value is 0, variance is this. So it goes with little probability calculations, you can say, show that for n equal to 10,000, the variance theta would be less than 1 upon 100. You apply some Chebyshev lemma, whatever, inequality, so on. That theta bar in mean value would be lying 0.3 minus 0.3. And the usual theory of confidence interval says, if for this observed S, some values of parameter, this inequality is not satisfied, then that parameter value is improbable. What does it mean here? There are in omega many values of the theta curl in this omega. There are many values for which this will not be satisfied for an observed S. And the improbable value, so they are, we are going to call, they are implausible. And on the basis of two different samples, S prime S, the set of implausible values are different. That means we have made on the basis of S an inference about unknown theta. And yet, the distribution of S is independent of. Now let me go to summarize what it means to statistics. As said before, statistical theory consists of partial formalization of intuitive concepts like likelihood, sufficiency, etc. Once you do that, then the statistical principle of likelihood or likelihood principle is suggested, say sufficiency principle. And there is a hierarchy, this logical hierarchy. If you have this means logical implication, then likelihood principle implies a sufficiency principle. Now above all, if you call A the ancillarity principle, which I just this here, then L implies S and S implies A. And anything, now here first of all remember, this L, this is not roof, root. L is at the root of large amount of Bayesian theory and practice. And S, the sufficiency, is at the root of all statistics, very generally. And L implies S, S implies A. If any paradox, anything contradicts A, it contradicts everything in statistics. And I have shown you what contradicts A. And that is the conclusion.